I don't think most people are trying to rip other people off. And that, I think that is a very different conversation. I think what we're more interested in continuing is just like better education and better knowledge so that these conversations are easier to have, so that both sides are better informed at talking about what it means to use other artists' work in your work.
Welcome to this special edition of Design Future Now from AIGA, the Professional Association for Design. My name is Lishan Huang, Director of Design, Content, and Learning here at AIGA, and I am joined by our special guests today, Heather Mariah Dixon and Abigail Cairns from Studio HMVD, a Brooklyn-based woman-led content and branding studio. Today, we're going to learn more about Heather and Abby's journeys as designers, as photographers, as creative content creators, but also focus on this topic around appropriation and plagiarism and where to draw that line from inspiration to appropriation. So thanks for joining us on the show today.
Thanks for having us. We're really excited to be here. And this is a conversation we're really excited to be having and something we talk about a lot in our practice. So it'll be great.
Thanks for the warm intro.
Yeah.
So I did the brief intro, but I always love to hear your own stories from your own mouths. So tell us about your origin stories as designers, but also together as a studio, as a joint practice.
Absolutely. I'll kick things off. I grew up with a really creative childhood, was always in dance and art and all that kind of fun, creative stuff as a kid. And then when I got to college, this sort of natural pursuit that I thought was going to be the best choice for me was art. So I went into printmaking, and it's a funny story, but as I was pursuing a degree in printmaking, I was only doing typography and reproducing ads. And I told people that I wanted to be a commercial artist. So eventually a really kind professor that I had at Western Washington University, where I and Abby attended, recommended that I go downstairs and check out the design program. And the rest is kind of history there. I ended up graduating with a double major in both fine arts and design. And then very soon after, you know, I've always been interested in fashion and beauty and luxury. So the natural choice for me was to move to New York and begin my career. After moving to New York, I'll keep this brief because it was quite the winding path, but I freelanced at a variety of agencies as well as independently. I sort of always had these independent projects going no matter where I was at full-time or freelance. A small business owner would come to me and say, I have nothing but a name and a product, and I want to make this go live. And I would help them figure out the best way to go through from strategy before I even knew to call it strategy all the way to photographing their products, sometimes like on the sidewalk. And, you know, just kind of this very scrappy, hands-on approach to making things in a really holistic and really considered manner. And then at my last full-time job, I was fairly kind of feeling stagnant. And then at night and early in the morning, I would go home and work on these projects that I really cared about. And eventually, through a turn of events, I ended up having enough work outside of my regular job that I was able to quit. And I was able to launch Studio HMVD in 2018. I'll hand it over to Abby and then we can kind of sync back up.
Yeah, like she mentioned, we met in college. So I also attended Western Washington University. I studied dance as well as design. And so because of those being my areas of focus, it also made sense to move to New York. So we moved right around the same time. My design path took a very different course. I ended up in a lot more institutions like NYU and higher education, as well as other arts, specifically movement-based programs. So a lot of times my positions were straddling administration and design. So I was often in offices and things like that, where design and marketing needed to be integrated into the work we were doing administratively, whether that be programming or the likes. Eventually, I ended up a Pilates studio, and I was working as their program director for their international teacher training program. And throughout that career, I picked up a lot about like operations and the structure that goes into allowing these creative people to really thrive and make the work that they want to do. And so that's kind of where I realized that this, like, that's where my little niche was, is like building structures that allow creatives to really flourish. And at about that time where I was hitting kind of an apex at my job, for my full-time position, Heather had started the studio about 6 months prior, and she was reaching a point where I felt like she could like use some help and like just help. And I saw what she was building and was just like really impressed by the work that she was already outputting as a single woman studio. And so I basically told her I was showing up to work and that she had no choice. And so I came on board and we started building that together. And
Abby just showed up and I couldn't say no and didn't want to either, because, you know, she has a brilliant mind for kind of constructing like more of a strategic approach around creative work and kind of finding the way to make like a foundation so that you can go do your best work and you can go make anything. So after she joined, that's kind of when I consider the studio like really truly beginning. The first 6 months were very much trying a lot of different things. In the first 6 months, we also would take on any kind of project that was vaguely creative in a lot of ways. I did book designs. I pitched for interior design. I, you know, was really, really all over the place. Packaging, NISC, like ad hoc graphic design, as well as branding, as well as photography, as well as strategy, and kind of just doing whatever I could get my hands on. When Abby came on, we really, really streamlined and decided then and there, okay, we're going to do two things. We're going to create brand identities and whatever comes within the brand identity, so long as we have that kind of control over the base identity. And then further, we're going to bulk out our content creation side of the practice. So we're going to do photography and stop motion for campaigns, social media, brand launches. And that's really what we've stuck with for the last like 3 years now, is those two areas of expertise. And a lot of times they really do overlap and have a lot of merge to them. I mean, some of our projects are just branding and they start with strategy and end with brand guidelines. And some of our projects start with strategy and end with a photo shoot and a website and everything, all these different touch points, packaging that we've designed and we've had a hand in. On the other hand, sometimes we get to just do product photography and send it off and be done. And that's also really nice. So yeah. And something I want to touch on here is just how we ended up being two trained designers that ended up in, you know, photography. And that's kind of an interesting, image making is a very different side of the industry, right? And a departure from type and graphic design. And that actually happened in a really interesting way. When I started the studio, I felt like, you know, I had this work that I wanted to display. I was like, okay, I have, you know, these great projects, time to put them in the portfolio. And then when it came to putting them in the portfolio, I'd go, well, I had custom collateral made for this, or, well, this mock-up that I can find online really does not make any sense within this kind of brand world I've created. I might as well just shoot it myself. So I started going up on my roof with the kind of like mediocre digital camera I had at the time and just photographing things in the natural sunlight on my roof with no shadows around, and just started to kind of build up some work and start to play and start to understand how to style things and how to work with light and, you know, those kind of basics. And then soon clients started to see that work and say, hey, can I use this? Can I put this on my social media? And I was kind of like, oh, that's interesting. Do you want to pay for it? and at first they were like, no. You know, we had to work a lot on that. But as we grew, it began to become a request that we were getting more and more, as well as we were able to prove like, oh, we've done, you know, all the photography for this brand, or we've done this for this. So yeah. And then as Abby came on to like, we just learned to work together even farther. And Abby like has a great natural instinct for styling and for building up a composition. And we just learned more and more together on like the technical aspects until, you know, we've become a very confident studio in that area.
How did you train up some of those previous clients to be like, hey, this is an additional service that wasn't necessarily in the original scope, and this is also something that you would scope out and charge for?
Well, in a lot of cases, I didn't. And we didn't. I mean, we would say, hey, you know, people would say, hey, can I have that photo you, or can I, I'm going to repost that photo you took for your portfolio on my Instagram. And I kind of say, okay, because we really didn't know better. And also we really didn't have the strength to say, hey, no, to that client? I think as Abby came on, maybe you want to fill in here.
Yeah, I think strength, but more the language. We didn't really have the language to use to talk to clients about that, especially as we were growing in the early years. About like, part of that was the way that our contracts were written. They weren't written in a way that was clear about scope additions of stuff like that. So that was an aspect to it, as well as learning about licensing itself and what that actually means as far as usability and wear and length of time. You know, those were just like terms and stuff that we did not understand. And it took a lot of missteps on our part, on top of just general research and meeting other people in the industries and them being really open and frank with us about, you know, what we should be expecting and demanding of our clients. And also helping them learn too, because that's another aspect of this, is self-education, but also educating the people that you're talking to, because like licensing is not common knowledge for people who are engaging with that work. And so being prepared to say, this is the way that it is, because these are industry standards and these are personal standards that we have as well. So yeah, that definitely took growing, and kind of to Heather's point, like we didn't really do very well at first, kind of stumbled for a while.
I think one thing that kind of was more than telling clients that we had, hey, this is what we need to do for this. It was more like, all right, the next client will start them on a fresh contract that protects us in that area, or, you know, photography will be included in the scope. And it will be clear that, you know, if you want to purchase photography from us, that's an additional cost. So yeah.
Yeah. I think it's worth mentioning here now that none of us here are trained as lawyers, but at a certain point you do want to work with a lawyer on your contracts and your licensing agreements and all of that. But there's a lot of it that we as designers, as content creators can do, just understanding what some of these professional standards and norms might be, and talking with each other in the community, but also talking with clients and figuring out how to communicate that in ways that's more on the norm side, in addition to the legal side with the help of lawyers. I want to explore that a little bit more, but first I just wanted to finish sketching out a little bit about your practice. So you have this interesting two-pronged practice with the brand identity and the portfolio photography, content creation kind of work. Are there other studios like yours that have these kind of dual models, or how did you decide on this? Or do you have sort of analogs and direct competitors in that sense?
So I think the closest studio that we know of is probably Party of One Studio, because they do both brand identities as well as this kind of very sensorial art direction and photography. But there are not, to our knowledge, a lot of fully direct competitors that do really, really have a really, really similar structure to us. There's a lot of studios that offer branding, and then they offer like art direction, but you know, they don't shoot the photography in-house, whereas we do for most of our work. Sometimes we do art direct other photographers, but like for our product work, we shoot and kind of keep the whole production process in-house. So there's definitely more. It's a growing industry as well, and a growing type of niche.
So let's talk about your influences and inspiration then, because you have these various creative disciplines that you're coming from. Like, who inspires you, or what inspires you in your creative work?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question. I mean, one thing that we always come back to just over and over and over again whenever we're in a creative rut is where we live, which is the city of New York, and being able to walk out our front door and look around and see kind of the layers of humanity and interest and grime and visual chaos that goes on outside of our studio every day. So I would say that that's one really, really large and ongoing inspiration for us. I mean, we'll be like going to go source props from some weird store, and Abby will be like, look at the R on that sign. What's wrong with it?
Yeah, we are often taking pictures of things that we see throughout the city and also our travels too. Specifically, like Heather's saying, like type is a big one. Like, we're often looking for like old vintage hand-painted type, and we're just like, look at this crazy text or this crazy texture that I saw. Yeah, so that's definitely a big part of it.
In terms of people and kind of movements that we like, there's a lot of incredibly talented artists and designers that we have both the privilege of admiring from afar, as well as like knowing. I'll just name a few names that we've followed for a long time and enjoyed the work of. I mean, I think it goes without saying in the creative industry, we've always been a big admirer of Roe & Co. As you know, a kind of earlier woman-founded agency that's kicked ass for years. And then from that, like some more contemporary designers that we've really enjoyed seeing the work of is like Leandro Assis, does incredible lettering and really cool work. Noemi Lacaz, who is part of Little Troop Studio and does some really, really kick-ass brands. Verena Michalich, I think is her last name. Her portfolio photography is incredible. She's always had the best case studies ever. We also really appreciate the work from a photography standpoint of Tyler Mitchell, who, you know, shot Vogue covers and really does amazing things, as well as very dear to our heart, our good friend, John Henry, who has produced an incredible body of work over the last few years. And we're just absolutely in admiration of, as well as from a typography standpoint, we're big fans of Trey Seals at Vocal Type. So those are just some names.
We'll post that in the show notes too, but really appreciate you sharing some of your influences and also shouting out some of your peers and your friends in the industry. On that point of finding inspiration just in your environment, in the urban environment, there are probably things that you take pictures of that you can't attribute because you don't know who created it, or it's historical, or it's just through osmosis, right? It's things that you experience and then maybe you reproduce in some way. How do you navigate some of these fuzzy lines that I think all creative content creators have to deal with between inspiration and direct appropriation or inappropriate uses? How do you deal with this? Not necessarily on the legal end of things, but just the creative and industry norms side of things.
I think that that's a really, really valuable question because it's something that comes up a lot, you know, where you, I mean, there's been times where you've been sketching and you've been making a logo and you're like, this is awesome. And then you look at the logo and you're like, I have just made the Pepsi logo. Like, this just happened to me. Because, you know, we're very, like, humans are very visual and things kind of catch in your brain. And it's easy to find yourself in a position where you're trying to make something original, but there's so much in the world that it's hard to even carve out your niche and create something that's really different. A couple kind of techniques we have for doing this are, for one, starting like not on the internet helps a lot in terms of finding inspiration, at least for looking at things that are not what everybody else is looking at from the first get-go. It's always good to kind of like look around the internet and be inspired by your peers and be inspired by current design, but not using it as a starting place, actually, we find really does help us kind of come up with fresh and original ideas. When you're looking like historical, looking at what you see in something and then looking at thinking about what you like about that thing. And this kind of goes for any bit of inspiration. Why do I like that? Why do I want to make that? Like, what about that makes me want to go, oh, that is so good, I wish I did it. And what are those kind of building blocks, right? Is it because of the way they use type? Is it the color palette? Is it the combination of all of those things? Is it some contrast in shape or texture or size? Is there some building block that makes that good? And if you can kind of delineate and define that, then you can look at that building block and go, okay, I'm going to make something really good, but I'm going to use the formula that they used. I'm not using the type that they're using. I'm not using the color they're using, but I'm thinking I want a huge difference in scale. Or I want a million colors on this page. I want a really complex buildup of three different typefaces. And you can make something that becomes your own thing. It is totally original, but you're looking at that just kind of intrinsic thing of like what makes it appealing. So that's kind of a recommendation, as well as just doing litmus checks with yourself. Like, you know, if you find something and you fall in love with it, it happens to the best of us. Just coming back every once in a while and going, am I making something that is replication and not original? And how do I make it original? And how do I make it my own?
Specifically on that point with photography, often what I like to look for in our concepts and what we're doing is like, we shouldn't be able to find the image we're trying to make. So it's like, if you are, you know, we've come up with a concept and we've developed it within the strategy. And then now we're looking for the inspiration. We're looking for lighting references. We're looking for textures and things like that. And we should not, through that research, like be able to find the exact image that we're making. And that's how I know that we're like on the right path and that we are truly being inspired versus appropriating or getting into that gray area. I think that you're trying to hint at.
Yeah, I really liked your point about starting your research off the internet. The internet is great, right? There's so much that you can get, but I think, you know, people are often searching for the same things, or the same things kind of show up in people's search engine optimization feeds and things like that. And so having something maybe older, more historical, or maybe more obscure that hasn't been digitized or isn't so readily findable online, I think is a great kind of creative point, as well as a sort of avoiding too much of the same kind of thing. But I think the reality is a lot of us do have to do research online, and it's just so easy from a technological perspective to, you know, have Pinterest boards full of things or create our own mood boards from things that we find online. So I'm sure your stuff ends up in people's searches or in people's mood boards and things like that. What are some of the techniques that you have used to protect your work and make sure that you communicate the rights and permissions of that to folks who are looking around and looking at your images?
Yes, I will do a quick mention that, of course, there are always legal things that come into play with copyright infringement and licensing that we've touched on before. And I always recommend talking to a lawyer about that and making sure that you're up to date on the awareness of like what your rights are within and without. But basically, I think to answer your question, it's like if somebody is using your image without your permission, honestly, the best way, and we use this pretty much every time, and I would say most of the time it's pretty effective, is just reaching out and saying, hey, I love that you love my image, but if you would like to continue to use it, like you will need to purchase the licensing. Or, you know, a lot of times what happens is these images are being licensed. Most of our work is for our clients. And so that professional work is often limited to an exclusive license that our clients have. And so therefore, we often have to say, like, you unfortunately don't have the right to license this image. If you would like to work with us, we'd be happy to like talk to you about what doing a project would look like so that, you know, we can create those images for you. And I would say most of the time it's just met with like complete misunderstanding of what it means to license an image. Like often people don't know that they're overstepping boundaries.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I feel like it's important to have the lawyers on ready, but sometimes like just the email is enough to just sort things out, right? Sometimes it's just not knowing, or it's like oversight of like somebody's intern pulled this thing and or whatever that might be. So I appreciate where you're going with this of like assuming good faith, reaching out, and then you can always escalate if you need to. Hopefully you don't.
Yeah. And I think that's something that we find a lot is that, you know, misuse of images, whether it's like our work or, you know, we see the misuse of our peers' work as well, is like, it feels personal because it's work that we have made personally. So it certainly can feel like a little hard to swallow and embarrassing. And a lot of like stuff can come up around that. But I think at the end of the day, it's just like communicating. And this goes back to our earlier point about like, having the language to talk about these things and like better inform. And the unfortunate part is that there is, you know, has been a norm of like, it is okay to take swipe and it is okay to like have these images in your portfolios and things like that. And in areas that like are really probably you should be looking at licensing these images and getting permissions and things like that. And the more that we have dialogues about like what attribution looks like and like what it means to uplift the artists that you're being inspired by, the better that, you know, designers and other creatives will get at using that work and doing the things that I truly believe they're setting out to do. I don't think most people are trying to rip other people off. And that, I think that is a very different conversation. I think what we're more interested in continuing is just like better education and better knowledge so that these conversations are easier to have, so that both sides are better informed at talking about what it means to use other artists' work in your work. And I think I'll call out specifically with designers, that conversation is really familiar when we're talking about typefaces. I think we're all very familiar with the process of like talking to a type foundry and saying, this is where I'm trying to use it, this is how many people I'm trying to use it for, and this is how long I'm going to use it. And I think if we can start to shift our mentality around like that extends to illustrators, that's going to extend to videographers and photographers and any other creative that you're involving in your process, like, should be held with kind of the same respect and esteem.
I think that another kind of interesting point here within the differences between the design industry and the photography industry is just from a business structure standpoint. A lot of designers are paid in a per project basis, or they're on a salary, or they're paid hourly for their work. And for the most part, when you are making work for a client, you assign the copyright to them, or you are hired by that company as an employee. So you're making work under their employment, or you're making work for hire work. And so a lot of times the licensing conversation is just very, very unfamiliar for designers, truly, because that's not the way their business is structured. Whereas a lot of photographers, a lot of illustrators, their business is, they may be commissioned to make a work, but the kind of bulk of their earnings come from being able to continually license their work and being able to continually leverage the copyright that they have created, that intellectual property, that photograph, and being able to say, okay, so-and-so used this for 5 years. They had a limited license with me. That license is expired. They've chosen not to renew. So you can license that image from me now, or I can list that image on a stock photo website and be able to kind of have that passive income. And that's a big, big part of a lot of image creators' earnings and their livelihood. So infringing on that is a pretty big deal, which is just a kind of, yeah, industry like misunderstanding, and something that, you know, a lot of especially designers who are new in the industry or just graduated just don't know. Nobody teaches us.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that perspective on how these two industries, even though they're adjacent, have very different kinds of business and compensation models for creators. What are some of the other things that you wished more designers or even clients knew about how permissions and licensing work?
There's a lot of things, but one of the kind of big things too is just that just because it's on the internet doesn't mean that you are able to use it, and that credit is not enough. You know, saying like, okay, that photo was taken by Studio HMVD, but I'm going to use it in my portfolio to promote my work, even though it's their image, I'm using it as a quote unquote placeholder image in a project that I've done. Just crediting any photographer is not enough, because like we talked about with that compensation model and the kind of structure of the industry, you're taking away the opportunity for them to profit off of their work because you're showing it illegally and weakening the value that it has in a lot of ways, because you're saying this is used with credit and that's enough. And meanwhile, you're using it for your own, potentially for your own commercial gain, which means you're making money off of somebody else's work. So that's where it gets really tricky. And I think that that's kind of a big one, is that like credit is often not enough. Reaching out and asking is really the most important first step when you want to use an image. When in doubt, just use stock photography. There's so many resources for free stock photography, as well as low cost stock imagery. And you can get really incredible imagery on like Stocksy, and Unsplash has tons and tons of images that you can use. No attribution even required, although it's always helpful and nice when you can give the credit to the original maker who put it on Unsplash. And, you know, there's just all of these resources for really high quality stock imagery if you can't afford to license from the photographer that you would like. But oftentimes just asking, I mean, a lot of photographers don't necessarily advertise that they're licensing out their work, but they might do it. And it's just great to ask.
The other thing that comes with asking, as well as your giving that artist agency in how their work is being used, which I think is a big thing for us, is that a lot of times when work is miscredited, sometimes one of the most painful parts of that is knowing that you didn't have any decision-making power in that, and that it's like, you know, you've lost like control basically. And I think that's something to remember too. It's that like these artists who are creating photography or any kind of like creative content, they're humans. These are all like human conversations that we're talking about. And I think that's just so important to remember in this creative work. I think sometimes the licensing conversation can get really bummed down into like the business side of things, which is super important. But at the same time, it's nice to remember that like these are just fellow humans that are making art and pouring their heart and souls into this you know, their work. And I think a little bit of empathy goes a long way here.
Yeah. I just wanted to add the point too, that's often in this age of remix and of aggregation that things get decontextualized. And so I think that's an important part of these conversations of asking as well of like, okay, what is this being used for? What is it showing up next to? Or like, just because you license something doesn't mean you can modify it in certain ways or, you know, put a different border or packaging on something in a way that maybe is also doesn't do right by the original work or the creator's intent in terms of just the dignity of stuff like that. So I think that larger context around where the work will be used or modified or curated, I think is an important part of the conversation as well.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. And I think really well said. And I think kind of sums up a lot of like the, like what makes this so important too. It's like what really is the idea here. And something that you just brought to my mind too, is like a lot of times these conversations can be a really great door opener to collaboration, which can make both the work of the designer and the artist or photographer even better and even add to the context of the work and really kind of like elevate both aspects of this and, you know, really open doors to like taking these kind of two adjacent chunks and merging them together into one like harmonious piece.
Maybe the clients even end up with something that's even more specifically useful for what they're looking for, right? It's like, it's one thing to license, but you could also commission something new. It's like in the style of this, and then that turns into the collaboration.
Yeah, absolutely.
So kind of unrelated question. Can you tell us a little bit about your setup? Anything you want to share about some of the technical side of your craft?
Oh yeah, for sure. Speaking as the resident gearhead. So we shoot on a Nikon D810. Our favorite lens to use is the 105 millimeter macro. We love a high quality, crisp, every detail and focus kind of image. So that macro lens is great for us. For that, we also shoot with the 50, and oftentimes we'll rent an 85 millimeter lens if we need to shoot lifestyle or portraiture or anything that we need a little more space on. And then in terms of our studio setup, we shoot with Profoto lights. So we have D1s and a D2. And kind of the modifiers, whatever modifier we need to get the job done, we'll either rent or use what we have. We love grids, which are these things you put over the light to make the beam of light controlled and very narrow, which is great for kind of highlighting different areas of the image. We have lots of foam core and then cinefoil chunks laying around and clear rods and tack and fishing line and all the kind of things that you use to create a scene. And then one of our favorite tools is diffusion paper, which is...
We can't stop preaching about it. Everybody who will listen, we will tell them about diffusion paper. So if you want to have a conversation about the benefits of diffusion paper, slide into the DMs because we will get back to you.
We'll talk to you about diffusion paper for too long, and we will also hand you a pamphlet on it. And then we shoot tethered using Capture One so that we can really, really be very, very detail oriented as we shoot. So every image comes up on our laptop screen as we shoot and we see exactly what we're doing. And we just tend to be very methodical and really move through the image in a pretty controlled manner.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. And for folks who do want to follow up, we have links in the show notes, but could you just say on mic now, if people want to follow you or learn more about your work, where should they go?
Our website is studiohmvd.com. And then our handle on Instagram is @studiohmvd. So we're pretty easy to find on there. Though I will say our emails are the easiest way to get a hold of us. info@studiohmvd.com. We're always on email. So we love, and we preach emails as well. So, you know, we like to get lots of emails. So feel free to.
It's like, please email. Please don't call. Please don't just show
up. Yeah. I would say
emails are more reliable than DMs too.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wonderful. And so if we could sum up some of the conversation and the messages today, if you had like a headline or a telegram you wanted to send to our audience about the essence of this conversation, what might that be?
Start from scratch. look at your inspirations and find something new and different that, you know, your peers aren't looking at. And when in doubt on anything licensing related, be it to a photographer or for your own work, just ask. Always better to ask than to guess. We never guess, we look it up.
Plus one, agreed.
So Heather and Abby, thank you so much for joining us, telling us more about your practice of branding and content creation at Studio HMVD, and for having this frank conversation with us about the different business models from photography, how it's different from design, and just some of these norms of professional courtesy and decency to other creators. So thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so much. This was wonderful.